G'day leaders. Recently, I heard two terms I hadn't heard before. The first one is psychobiotic, and the second one is the gut microbiota. I've heard of the gut microbiome, but not the biota. Anyway, fascinating science and a great book that we spoke about in the podcast about the link between what you eat and your moods and the amazing science that's coming out. Enjoy.
Why did it count backwards? I know that we're now recording.
What? Hello, Captain.
What do I...
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Oh,
what are we going to talk about?
I don't know. So, leadership, life, and everything else.
Yeah. And we're live.
You got it too quick. I was just about to say, and we're live, and I feel learned.
Learned.
Yes, I've learnt something, and I feel learned.
Right.
Yes.
Educated, as I feel someone educated. Would say.
Yeah, I thought I'd go with an obscure reference. So. Got this new book.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Called The Psychobiotic Revolution, Mood, Food, and the New Science of the Gut-Brain Connection. And... we don't normally do this, so let's give the authors a shout out because I'm pretty slack at this. So it's Scott Anderson with Dr. John Cryan and Dr. Ted Dinan. Anyway, I, within seconds, was hooked on this book.
Yeah, because we read out the front every morning, and this is a new book for you. And, yeah, you've been stopping me every page and telling me.
You're trying to read, and I'm going, hey, did you know this? Yeah, I know. I'm a bit annoying. I'm like that little puppy dog in that cartoon. Remember the little puppy dog that was always chasing after the bigger dog? Yeah. And, so, for example, a single bacterium given enough to eat could multiply until its brethren, its family, reached the mass of Earth in just 2 days.
If it was given
enough
the
food.
The right food.
Yeah. So bacteria, yeah, they love to eat.
Yeah.
And then, multiply and grow.
Okay. Yep. So going on from that, you told me, another little tidbit that you told me that at every hour.
It's new. It's brand new.
So thankfully... within 2 days, it's not going to happen.
No.
Because it changes over every hour.
Yeah, yeah. So this book is about the relationship between our gut and our, I guess, mental health.
Which those of us who have gut issues absolutely agree with that. Possibly don't know the science behind it. Well, I didn't.
Well, but, I can read some of it while we're going through this. But tell me about your experience with gut-related issues.
When I was young, we lived overseas. We grew up in Asia, and we didn't have access to fresh milk, and so it was either powdered milk or
yummy,
or none, or condensed milk,
sweet.
So we didn't have milk.
Okay,
and then we came back to Australia, and then just went crazy with milkshakes and ice cream and cheese and milk.
Yeah.
Milo and things and quick. And we then built, we had an absolute intolerance to dairy, to lactose. So we then, you know, and it came up as rashes and all different symptoms, but one of them was foggy brain and we were young.
Yeah.
And
how did you know?
Well, that's right. That's it. Exactly. But
why isn't Barbie talking to Ken?
But we were very active in sport.
Yeah.
So our parents made us do sport every single day. We were in something else.
Wise.
So it didn't actually show until as teenagers.
Yeah.
We stopped sport because we were too cool. And which is probably when we should have done it more.
Yes.
We would also sneak because it was cool to have, you know, ice creams and milkshakes and things, and just started to not feel great.
So felt foggy.
Yeah. So finally, you know, we came to our own conclusions, my sister and I, that maybe it wasn't the best. But only a few years ago, I had a treatment for an illness, and it changed my tolerance to foods.
Well,
some
it was a
foods.
Big treatment.
Yes, and so I have not been able to tolerate gluten, which yes. And there were quite a few other things.
And what's your nickname for yourself?
Yeah, that, I know.
Most waiters who hear it don't like hearing it.
I call myself a glutard, but which is no disrespect to any actual glutards out there. But
gluten intolerance.
That's right. But I try and make light of it. But yeah. Because it's annoying, I know, to everyone
around
you.
Well, it's your condition. You're allowed to make fun of yourself.
But it does. What I'm getting at is it does affect my mental health. And so I get physical symptoms, but I notice that...
If you eat gluten.
If I eat gluten. Mm. But my brain also, it's not pleasant. I get brain fog.
Yeah.
But also feel low.
Low.
So it's a whole raft of things, and whether it's because of the physical conditions, I then start to feel low, and what you've been telling me in the chapters you've read so far, it's which one comes first. But it's,
well, by the sounds of it, with you, it's the gluten, which leads to the mood disorder.
Yeah. But it's not pleasant. So you actively avoid having it because you don't want to feel like that.
And you say that water is your go-to.
Yes.
I'm presuming that flushes your system.
Maybe. I thought it was a brain chemical that it helped me, and maybe Pavlov's dog thing that if I take a glass of water, it.
So you notice a significant difference if you have gluten. What about dairy? Does dairy just make you feel foggy? Does it?
I just don't feel good.
Yeah. Well, this book is showing that there's a very strong correlation between, maybe even a causation between, what you eat and how you feel.
Mm.
And so there's been lots of experiments, but just some of the stuff that's in this book is blowing me away. So, like, in your gut today, you're a host to trillions, not billions, but trillions of bacteria. And they're online 24/7, duking it out with rogue microbes and even helping you produce vitamins and sucking calories out of every bit of fiber that you eat. And they're just working with you. And I love in this book how it talks about the relationship between humans and, or animals and bacteria. So millions of years ago, bacteria and animals struck up a deal. So this is directly from the book. I love this quote. In return for a moist bed and a warm buffet, beneficial bacteria took up the job of defending us against the madly proliferating pathogens in the world, because it takes a germ to fight a germ.
Mm.
So we've got a whole bunch of bacteria in our body fighting off pathogens for us in a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
But, okay, what percentage of you is human, Michelle? Have a
I
guess.
Know.
You know the answer. So, but I found this one incredible. So
you told me. That's
yeah,
why.
I think this is incredible. So microbial genes, which outnumber your human genes, they outnumber them by an amazing 100-1. So when you do the math, it's basically saying that you're a hybrid creature of the
less than 1%,
and yet you are genetically only 1% human. 99% of you genetically, not the mass of you, but genetically, 99% of you are microbial genes.
So it's not just my opinion of some of my exes.
What are you thinking about, like, potential Neanderthal genes? I think I've got a bit of Neanderthal in me. I occasionally, you know, beat my chest and walk around on all fours. No, I don't. But yeah, there's this book is amazing, because I had a similar experience with dairy to you, but mine came much later in life. I had an illness I couldn't get rid of. So the doctor put me on a course of antibiotics, and after 2 weeks, still there. So another 2 week, I think 1 week or 2 week dose of this very strong antibiotic. And I grew up, unlike you, loving fresh milk. I used to go to the fridge every day after school, grab the carton and just drink straight from the carton a litre of milk. That was my go-to thing. I loved it, loved milk. And it, still to this day, just the memory of drinking milk is extraordinary. But as we discovered after that 2 or 3 weeks of antibiotics, my body doesn't like lactose anymore. In fact, I developed... Let's put it this way. I developed a new propulsion method. I could get upstairs much quicker than I used to. I couldn't take a step without having some extra propulsion. It became a bit of a joke, but to me, it was funny, and I'm glad you laughed. But I was so disappointed, because that meant cheese, milk, ice cream, gone. And I love ice cream and I love cheese and I love milk. I still partake. What I'm trying to do, because reading this book now, it gives me hope, because apparently if your gut biome changes every hour, basically, that there's hope that I can bring it back. But I really, the ability to eat ice cream, that is. But I really want to get into some of the quotes that are in this book. I just find this extraordinary. Just I've heard about the connection between the gut and the brain.
Well, isn't the gut the second brain?
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying in here. And this is only a recent term, that I've got to find the bit in the book where it talks about this. But all right, let's start with this. So you've heard of the gut microbiome.
Yes.
That's the environment.
That's the home.
The home. Have you heard of the gut microbiota?
Well, you've told me about it, so yes.
But before I told you that, no, neither had I. So the gut biota is the microbiome, the community of microbes that are living in your gut.
They're called the
microbiota.
Yes.
But the microbiome is the environment, the environment that they live in. Right. And it's so important, because the biota has a direct relationship to how we feel. And one of the examples it gave in the book, so have you ever had food poisoning?
Yes.
Yeah, so you've eaten something you know that's bad. So some pathogen has come into your body from your food. And then you start to get that feeling in your stomach and in your intestines, and you think, oh, this isn't good. So what does your body do?
Wants to get rid of it.
It wants to get rid of it, yeah. So it sends signals to your immune system, but it's wanting to get this stuff out of you. So it actually changes your mood. So when you have got food poisoning, how would you describe your mood?
Anxious.
Anxious because you want to get...
To a bathroom.
Good. That's exactly what it's saying in the book. So imagine this. You eat a pathogen. Your body goes, oh, we don't want that. So your gut biome, your gut biota kicks into gear, sends messages to your immune system. Hey, we've got to flush this system. So then it directly affects your mood. Your anxiety levels go through the roof.
You don't know which end
and it's
point.
Going to come out. No, exactly. And so that anxiety is a mechanism to motivate you to get to a bathroom.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like proof that your gut biome has the ability to change your moods. It builds anxiety to get you moving towards the bathroom so you can, you know, clean it out. And then it also speaks about that when we feel sick, like, so when we have an infection or something like that, nature has wired us to lay low. So when you feel sick, you just want to cuddle up in your bed,
hide from the world,
get under a doona, please bring me soup and leave me alone.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's called sickness behavior. So that sickness behavior, when you think about it from an evolutionary point of view, it makes sense, because you rest to give your body a chance to heal, but you isolate yourself from others.
Mm.
And the reason why you would do that is so that the people around you don't catch the pathogen.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
So lying down.
That's clever.
It is clever. Yeah, your body says, go and lie somewhere else where you're in and request to be alone, bring me soup, but then leave me alone. It's your body saying, hey, isolate yourself from other people so you don't pass on the pathogen, and rest so that your body can heal. I think that's just brilliant. So you retire to a quiet space, yeah?
Mm.
And then so you'll stop spreading the contagion. But sickness behavior is better known as depression.
Oh, right.
So when people are depressed, what do they want to do?
Hide away.
They isolate themselves. They quite often go and lie down, and they can't find themselves the motivation or the energy to get up. And so if you endure that for any length of time, that sickness behavior is known as depression. But depending on the levels of inflammation that's happening in your body, you can suffer from both depression and anxiety. And it's basically all involved with your gut.
So a friend of mine many years ago, he...
Sorry, can I just jump in 2 seconds? Yes, really yes. important for me to say
yes.
that there are other there is depression. So like if you suffer a loss or some significant event outside your body, that can also lead to more the psychological depression.
Yeah.
This is like a physical depression. So I just need to clarify that because it's really important. And we're not saying here that the only source of depression is what you eat.
That's right.
Anyway, sorry.
A flying colleague or friend of mine from many, many years ago, he suggested, because every time I started to feel run down or on the edge of something, you know, a cold or flu or something, I would crave fried foods, which are not healthy at all. And it's not my typical go-to. And he had an opinion that it was, one, it's your body getting fat stores for you to go into hibernation. Now, I don't know if this is true or if it was just something that he said to make me feel better because I was sucking down heaps of fried, you know, potato scallops, those in Victoria will think that's weird. What do you call them? Potato cakes.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get enough fried food and then I'd go into the funk. So when you are sickly, I'd imagine the type of food. So if you have your soup, that will help you. So yes, you're hiding, you're resting, you're recovering.
Mm.
Soup and fresh foods or foods like that would help your second brain, your gut brain, heal. So if you're having chips and lollies or stodgy cakes and things, that's not going to help your gut brain.
It might give you a temporary high or a temporary...
Sugar.
One of the other things I read is that you've ever had a craving for chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you have that craving for chocolate, that's your microbiota saying, hey, I like this stuff. So you eat the chocolate, you get this change in your mood. So chocolate does elevate your mood.
Yes.
And... I think that explains comfort eating.
Ah.
So when we go through a bad period in our lives, quite often, who hasn't grabbed a litre of French vanilla Sara Lee ice cream, grabbed a crunchy bar and used that as the spoon and eaten the whole thing? Oh, just me? Oh, sorry, two crunchies. But just me?
It only comes in 1 litre. I've always done four. No.
Four? No, the Sara Lee French Vanilla Ice Cream is a 1 litre tub. Yeah, if you're getting 4 litre, I want to know your stockist.
No, I had the fancy blue ribbon.
Oh, the blue ribbon. The Neapolitan? Or the...
Yeah, and I like every flavour in the Neapolitan.
Yeah, me too. It was funny that some kids would go for, you know, the chocolate or the strawberry or the vanilla. I'd go for all three.
Yeah.
I'd be scooping across. Every scoop was a multicoloured delight. This relationship to what we eat and how we feel. So they've coined this term psychobiotics, which is a term to describe things like prebiotics and probiotics that are helpful to changing your mood. And they're doing a lot of research on this as to how we can use food to impact our mood.
But that's not a new thing. So nutritionists, naturopaths, Ayurvedic, they are all, this is like older medicine, have known this.
Anecdotally.
Yes.
Yeah, anecdotally. Right. So now we're starting to get some science to prove it, that food will boost your mood. So have you heard about the fecal transplants from humans to mice? Have you heard about this one?
No, I've heard of fecal transplants in humans to humans because we know someone who had that done.
We do.
To took a literal, cure, had a literal cure, shit yeah. sandwich.
Yeah, it was
excuse
a shit,
my friends.
Yeah, but yeah, it was in the form of a pill. A lot less.
But it made her better.
It did actually help tremendously. But there was the way that we're finding out the scientific evidence that proves this is, so imagine this, they took the fecal matter from a very depressed human being and put it into a mouse or a rat. And then that mouse or rat or those rats started to display depressive behavior.
Mm.
So they showed that it goes, you know, from one animal to another, from humans to mice. We haven't tried it back the other way, which I don't think would be very healthy.
Well,
but
we looked into it because of our friend who had it done.
Yeah.
And so, and there's also the thing of taking on the personality potentially of the donor.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're saying here with regards to if you are going to get a fecal transplant, not only do you want to make sure that they don't have any hidden diseases, you want to check to see what sort of personality that they have. So if they're a vivacious, vibrant, happy person, yeah, thumbs up. Grab
but
that.
Only
grab
if you
that
want to be
matter.
Like that. But if your resting state is not that, you may not want that.
I don't know. But if your resting state is not happy, then potentially that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
But the connection between food and mood has been established, but also between food and memory improvements, and also thinking improvements.
Yeah.
So they're showing that people who have again been supplied with certain microbiota in their microbiome. I'll stop throwing out these terms. Have had improvements in memory, improvements in thinking, problem solving abilities. So it just goes to show that what you eat and the variety of what you eat is so important.
Absolutely.
Well, we recently went to a weekend. We did some sound healing, and prior to that, we always
cleanse.
We cleanse. Yes. So we go off coffee. We go off sugar.
Processed
foods. We cut out all processed foods. We reduce. We cut zero alcohol. We cut out caffeine.
Red meats.
So we just very, very clean. So we still eat, free range chicken and stuff
and
like
fish,
that.
Yeah.
And fish. And what else? Anyway, but we cleanse.
We don't even have fermented. So that means
steering clear of.
Even bananas that are overripe.
Yeah, avocados. Yeah,
avocados.
So, anyway, we do this because we were guided to do it. And the difference in how you feel is, I find, quite extraordinary. I feel very peaceful and very present.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, very mindful of your food as well. It's mindful eating.
Yeah, because what they're saying is that it's all linked to inflammation in your gut.
I'm curious. So when you get further along in the book,
and I'm only one chapter in.
I know about the fasting, because we do fasting, and the clarity of mind on day 3 and day 4 is amazing.
Yeah.
So and my memory and just a mood, everything. I'm almost. I'm going to say ecstatic, but
mood elevated.
Yeah. The endorphins are huge.
Yeah.
And it's that I have this tug of war with myself on day 4 as to whether or not to stop the fast or to keep going, because it's such a good feeling.
It is. When your body goes into autophagy. Yeah. I always, 3 days in, I start to struggle simply because I get reflux. And because your body doesn't stop producing stomach acid, because it thinks it needs to digest food, but the food's not coming, but the acid is still coming, and so I get really bad reflux. But I've been told to eat celery potentially, and there was something else you could have to reduce that. But yeah, the clarity of mind is extraordinary. That's why when I do keynotes, and I think you do something similar, I don't eat in the morning. Because when I'm on stage, my brain needs to be on fire. And so I always talk hungry. I used to play hungry. I used to play, not the country. I did play hungry. we beat them once or twice. But, without any food in my stomach. And I find that my brain functions much, much better.
Yeah, well, fat, dumb and happy often can be because you're full.
Yes. Because you feel all foggy.
Yeah. So I am curious. When you get to that chapter, I'd like to... to know more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The other thing it's saying in the book, which I found interesting, and I hope it goes deeper into this, that it's not a one-way street. So if you eat bad things, it's going to affect your mood. But they've also mentioned, and hopefully they go deeper into it, that if you have a negative event in your life, this then can, like, so you've got anxiety, you've got depression, those sort of negative emotions or moods. It leads to negative changes in your microbiota. And I think it's called dysbiosis. I'll have to look that up anyway. But that disruption So your mood, so you start to feel depression and anxiety because of external circumstances, it then affects your,
it doesn't
your
have a memory.
Microbiota. So it goes, well, so it goes back the other way is what they're saying. And it's traveling up and down through your vagus nerve. And I'm going to have to go deeper into this book and this research because I'm finding this fascinating. So not only is what we're eating affecting our mood, because did you know that the microbiota helps produce in your stomach serotonin, dopamine, and what was the other one?
Well, dopamine in your stomach, I do know the dopamine in your stomach has a different effect on your mind than what dopamine produced in your brain.
Yes. So that's what I was saying. Oh, the other one was GABA, which is it's something aminobutyric acid or something. Anyway, I'll have to again look it up. But so GABA is the I think it's a neurotransmitter, or it's an acid, but it basically calms you down.
Mm.
So people with low levels of it, anxiety and depression, people with higher levels, but you can have too high. But yeah, serotonin, dopamine, and then GABA are produced because the bacteria helps us that get those neurotransmitters, and then using the vagus nerve connects or communicates with the brain. But like you said, we don't think that those neurotransmitters go into the brain, but they communicate with the brain probably in the same sort of fashion. So yeah, so it goes both ways. External factors can make you feel depressed and anxious, but also what you eat makes you feel depressed and anxious. So eating properly can help us.
Yeah, well, the good thing about this book, if it's out in mainstream, so as I suggested before, the people, the practitioners that are complementary health practitioners that have known this, and Eastern medicine has known this, the fact that it is now being studied and then put out into the world for mainstream to learn about it and maybe to introduce components, if not all of it, is a positive. So a lot of our stuff comes from Eastern medicine or ancient cultural traditions that they've known, and then we come in and potentially Big Pharma without starting debates on Big Pharma. But this is a good, this is positive.
It's very positive, very, very positive. So the thing about depression and anxiety, and I read this years ago, that they're very strongly associated with brain atrophy. So long-term depression and anxiety is very, very unhealthy for us because our brain will atrophy. There's also, they're now finding a connection between food, so what we eat, and things like helping with autism, MS, psoriasis, a whole range of conditions that they're finding a gut-related relationship.
A colleague of mine, her mum has MS, and I haven't spoken to this colleague for many years, but even 10 years ago, her mum was proactively managing her MS with diet. So she was very much she was doing ice baths. She was doing, and this is all before it became fashionable. She found that it helped her.
Oh, wow.
I saw recently Michael Klim's daily ice baths are helping his condition that he has, and also diet managing. So there's a huge relationship.
And I love that we're learning this
because
we weren't aware of any of this growing up. We were eating processed everything.
Well, kids are easy. They're easy litmus. You give them too much sugar or too many additives in foods. It doesn't even need to be sugar.
No.
And they go a bit crazy and then you get the crash and the moods and
Anyway, this is early days. I'm only in the first chapter. So I'm very, very interested in going down this pathway, because if there is a not a solution, but something that can dramatically help us improve our moods, lessen depression and anxiety, because it's a global epidemic, and depression
it
and anxiety.
It sounds like it's an easy fix in the fact that a slight adjustment in your diet can have a huge improvement in your mood.
Yeah, and so I've heard this for a long time now, that there is a huge global problem around depression and anxiety without really a correlated cause. We live in the most advanced civilization ever. We have everything that we need access to. Yeah, we all have psychological pressures, but the amount of depression and anxiety in relationship to our quality of life is disproportionate. It shouldn't be where it's at. So hopefully this gives us some information, and people who are out there who suffer from these awful mood disorders, that maybe there's something that can assist.
But again, the disclaimer that this is in no way any medical advice.
No, not at all.
But
look into it. Yeah. Because if we can help people improve their mood through eating better, doctors should be suggesting, hey, have you looked at your food? Have you looked at what you're eating? Obviously, some people need to be on antidepressants. There are people out there who suffer tremendously, and this is not us limiting or downplaying what they go through, but this is for all of us who food can affect our mood, and let's have good food.
So what was the book again?
Okay, so The Psychobiotic Revolution. So I'm going to learn more about this topic and start sharing the knowledge, because I think the world will be a better place when we all become our best self.
Absolutely.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was good.
See ya.
Bye.
Well, that was fun.
That was fun.
You're such a clown.
The clown.
Lady Captain. Lady.
And who's going to listen to this? Maybe our mums.
Thanks, Mum.